The mountains are humbling. It's hard not to feel that way when we see their sheer size, majesty, and the diversity they create. That's why it's also hard to believe how fragile these places are. They are some of the most untouched places on the globe, while also being incredibly vulnerable to human interference. This is a big reason why I joined the podcast, to discuss mountain issues and promote awareness, and deliver it right to your ears. I'm Ethan Ward, and you are listening to the Canadian Mountain Podcast. In this episode, we will be talking about the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals, and why preserving mountain landscapes is integral to achieving these goals. But before we begin, I'd like to take a moment to appreciate the land that we work on and the people we work with. The Canadian Mountain Podcast acknowledges that our conversations engage with diverse knowledge holders who live and work on unceded land and Treaties 1 to 11 of Indigenous peoples. We also recognize the historical and ongoing oppression that many different cultures, lands, and nations have continuously faced within Canada. We hope to continue our work to help decolonize, change, and inspire media platforms to further collaborate with Indigenous peoples through storytelling and partnerships. Did you know that in 2015, the United Nations developed 17 Sustainable Development Goals for all of its members to achieve by 2030? These goals, or SDGs, are focused on promoting peace, prosperity, and halting unsustainable development. But how does this impact mountains? Mountains cover 26.5% of land on Earth and 24% of Canada's landmass. And yet, mountain landscapes have limited representation in the 17 SDGs, with mountains only being mentioned in two of those goals. This is where the Canadian Mountain Network comes in, to emphasize how essential mountain regions are to reaching SDG targets. The three guests joining me today on this podcast will be highlighting these issues for all of us. Our first guest joining us today is Dr. Pamela Shaw, Research Director of the Mount Arrowsmith Biosphere Region Research Institute, and Director of Vancouver Island University's Master of Community Planning.
Hello, my name is Pam Shaw, and I'm the Research Director of the Mount Arrowsmith Biosphere Region Research Institute at Vancouver Island University. I'm also the Director of the Master of Community Planning Program, and I'm delighted to be here today on the unceded territory of Sinamic First Nation, which is around the midpoint of Vancouver Island on the eastern side of Vancouver Island.
Our next two guests are Courtney Vajois and Jenica Ng Cornish. Courtney holds a Bachelor of Arts in Sociology and Psychology from Vancouver Island University and is currently working with the Mount Arrowsmith Biosphere Region Research Institute as the Sustainability Project Coordinator. Many of her projects relate to the advancement of UN SDGs.
Hi, and I'm Courtney Bourgeois. I'm a Project Coordinator at the Mount Arrowsmith Biosphere Region Research Institute. I am also coming from the Sinamic First Nation and located in, also known as Nanaimo. A bit about myself, I've been focusing on the Sustainable Development Goals for a couple of years now, two and a half years with MABRI. I originally am from Alberta, but I've moved to Nanaimo almost 7 years ago now, so that's a bit about where I'm from.
Jenica has a Bachelor of Science in Geoscience and is also working with the Mount Arrowsmith Biosphere Region Research Institute as a Senior Research Assistant.
Hi, my name is Jenica Ng Cornish. I am a senior research assistant at the Mount Arrowsmith Biosphere Region Research Institute, and I am coming to you today from the Chemainus First Nation, which is which is just a little bit south of Nanaimo, so about 20 minutes south of Nanaimo, so slightly different unceded territory that I'm coming from today.
So to start off, you know, there's a lot of people who might not know what sustainable development goals are or what their purpose is or like why they're important. So I wanted to take that time to start us off to take kind of like a crash course in SDGs, a little SDG 101. My first question is for you, Courtney. What are SDGs?
Well, this is going to be a really quick crash course. So the SDGs, or the Sustainable Development Goals, were adopted in 2015 by the United Nations. They are 17 goals aimed to achieve a more sustainable world for everybody. They focus on all aspects of sustainability. They look at people, nature, environment, climate, the cultural pieces. So they encompass everything about sustainability, and there's 17 goals to achieve a more sustainable world in the future. They follow the Millennium Development Goals, which were adopted in 2000 by the United Nations. And by the end of their term for the Millennium Development Goals, the United Nations recognized that there was a positive momentum going forward. And so they wanted to continue that, and they developed the Sustainable Development Goals, which are the SDGs. So a unique difference between the SDGs compared to the Millennium Development Goals are that the SDGs focus on all world nations, whether they are developed or developing. So the Millennium Development Goals focus more on the developing nations looking to end like world hunger and poverty. But the SDGs are more encompassing of everything and everyone. So they're really unique in that way, and they're also like inspiring. They're large goals, and they're complex, and they require a lot of work. But we hope that all the United Nations hopes, and everyone else who is working with them, hopes that they will have this like pathway to a more sustainable future. So those are the SDGs. There's 17 of them, as I mentioned, but they're also broken down into targets and indicators. So there's 169 targets and then about 250 indicators. So these are the lower level kind of measurement tools for the SDGs. So the SDGs themselves are quite broad. The first one, for example, is no poverty. But like, what does no poverty mean? So then you use the targets and the indicators kind of to break it down and understand the different levels and topics underneath that.
So when we're talking about this at a very local and community level, when we are thinking about that, what groups and what people come to mind when we think of who is the most effective or who is the most affected by either the success or failures of SDGs?
I would say mostly the vulnerable communities or marginalized communities. Usually around the world, you see the vulnerable communities or the low-income communities the most affected by a lot of the issues. So they usually face the most inequalities. Or with the climate change crisis we're facing now, they're most affected with like the environmental impacts. So I would say those communities, usually they're with the least access to education or basic services or quality of education. I would say most affected would be the vulnerable communities. So if we succeed, then hopefully their communities will see some prosperity and they can grow and succeed as well.
You mentioned success there, which brings me to my next question for Pam. What is the measurement of success of SDGs? How do we measure how well they are actually doing and doing what they are supposed to achieve for marginalized communities?
It's such a good question, Ethan, and I'm going to answer it in a roundabout way and then come back to a point. So I do have a response for you, but there's a little bit of ground to cover first. And so we have to think about this as we're now dedicating ourselves to a human-centric, rights-based approach across all the 17 Sustainable Development Goals. And if we do that, if we truly believe that it's possible, we are going to shift the needle worldwide from measures that are most often focused on economic achievement to measures that are much more holistic and encompassing. And we all did that high school assignment of comparing the GDP of nations, and that was the indicator of success. So economic success was worldwide success. And the SDGs are breaking that down and saying that's not the only thing that's important. So it is a big shift in focus and very exciting work. So each of the SDGs has identified targets and indicators. As Courtney mentioned, there are 169 targets. And that gives us some good direction on how to measure the achievement or at least progress on each of the goals. But it's at the indicator level where things get really interesting. So that is, how can we achieve the targets and goals? That's where every individual and organization can take a tailored approach, look at what's under your jurisdictional authority, what do you have the ability to move the needle on, and then find ways to make that shift. Ultimately, a plan without any action is just a lot of nice words. And you can read the 17 Sustainable Development Goals and go, yeah, there's some lofty reaches in these goals. But if we don't do something about it, all it is just that collection of words on a page. However, if we don't have a plan and we're taking random action in whatever direction we decide to run that day, that's chaos. So neither is good. It's not good to have a plan that has no action attached onto it, and it's not good to have action that has no plan. So what we want to do, you know, imagine the power that comes from the entire world saying we're going to recognize these 17 high-level directions. We're going to trace a line from those goals into targets, into indicators, and then ultimately into local actions, because that's really all any of us can do, is to do something that we have control over locally, that we can move the needle on, that we can shift and make change happen. So I'll go back to your question. What is the measurement of success for the SDGs? And there isn't one answer. So I think that's sort of patently obvious in it. Overall, the measurement of success is going to be the global adoption of the SDGs as a framework, then the implementation of practical, localized action that truly focus on the betterment of humans, the environment, and the economy from a rights-based perspective. So it is, I don't want to sound too West Coast about it, but it is a shift in consciousness on a global scale. And that's pretty exciting.
Up to this point, we've been talking on a very broad, and as you said just now, a global scale. So if we're shrinking it down a little bit to a slightly more local perspective, Jenica, can you tell me, what is the relationship between the Sustainable Development Goals and Canadian Mountains, including the communities that exist within them?
Yeah, so the Sustainable Development Goals they're all about bringing all components of sustainability together. And I think I'm probably going to answer this kind of the same way Pam just answered her previous question, a little bit of a roundabout way, but bringing all these components of sustainability together. So the environment, society, cultural, and the economy. So we want to bring all these things together so that ultimately humanity can thrive in harmony with and while preserving the earth that we rely on. So in this sense, mountains are really critical systems for supporting sustainability. If we look at globally across the world, mountains make up almost 27% of the Earth's land mass. In Canada, this is about 24% of the land mass across the country. So physically, they're pretty significant. But if you look at what mountains and mountain systems actually have to offer, it's much further reaching than just this direct land mass that they make up. Mountains are often thought of as the water towers of the world, supplying almost half of the world's population with clean water. So even though they make up only around 27% of the Earth's surface, they provide almost half of the world with water. That is obviously crucial for survival. So the same kind of goes for all the resources that mountains provide. If we think of our natural resources like timber, minerals, and then our kind of societal resources like tourism, recreation, cultural diversity, spiritual values, and then research and development, of course. So all of these things, all these little pieces, all have their own places in the Sustainable Development Goals. So I guess the relationship that the SDGs have with Canadian mountains is very large and complex, because even though the SDGs don't, obviously, they don't explicitly focus on mountains. The word mountains is mentioned a couple of times across all of the goals. But if we're wanting to achieve global sustainable development, we can't focus solely on mountains. We can't use the word mountains for everything that we're looking to achieve. But the topics covered by all of the goals are all impacted by mountains in some way, and vice versa. Mountains are all impacting the SDGs in some way. So it's a kind of a circular, holistic, I guess, kind of relationship you can think about. And then you asked about the communities that exist within mountains. And in terms of how that relationship kind of unfolds, it's something that from the perspective of an academic researcher, it's not a question I don't think that we can really answer, because a lot of these communities are Indigenous communities that have these really deep, complex relationships with the land and with the mountain systems that they live in and that they've lived in for many, many years. So it's a very complex thing to talk about, and we can't really narrow it down to how their relationships are with the Sustainable Development Goals, because of course, we know Indigenous communities, sustainability is incorporated into their lifestyle, and it always has been far before this Western kind of approach of sustainable development goals. But we do know that mountain communities, of course, they rely on the same resources that everyone across the world relies on. They just, they have that more, I guess, direct relationship with the mountains that they're living in. So they, of course, rely on the land, the water, the resources to sustain themselves. And we know that mountains are particularly vulnerable systems when it comes to how the world is changing. So looking at the climate crisis, mountains are in danger, really, of the climate crisis. Things are changing rapidly in these systems. So the communities that live directly in mountains, they're most vulnerable to the changes that are being experienced across the world when it comes to climate change and biodiversity loss. But again, we need to think about more of a kind of a broad scope of the sustainability, and not just looking at how environmental changes are impacting the systems and the communities that live there. So the communities that live in mountains, the SDGs, I guess you could say that they relate to, I suppose, they range across all 17 of the goals. So you can think about no poverty, zero hunger. Those things are really important. They really are truly important in mountain communities, because mountains are a livelihood for these people. And you can also think about how mountain systems impact reduced inequalities, of course, climate action, and then all the way to goal 17, which is partnerships for the goals, which bridges everything together. And it helps to kind of allow people to think about things in a more kind of a network approach to achieving sustainability and the sustainable development goals. So yeah, that's a very roundabout way of answering, but it's a complex relationship, really, all in all.
So now moving specifically to the Canadian Mountain Network, Pam, can you tell me a bit about how are SDGs applicable to the Canadian Mountain Network specifically?
Yes, I can. Thanks for the question, Ethan. And so the Canadian Mountain Network is a federally funded network of centers of excellence. It is a partnership of projects that span across Canada from sea to sea to sea. And the projects themselves focus on a very diverse and wide range of topics. And overall, when we look at all the projects together and what each project is about, takes a holistic approach to understanding what is happening in fragile and contested mountain environments. That's the linchpin that holds us all together, is this idea of what is happening in these very special places on the Earth's surface. So the Canadian Mountain Network is a federally funded and research-based initiative. And so as this federal government created entity, the Canadian Mountain Network is well positioned to contribute to Canada's commitments to achieving the 2030 agenda. And the federal government has made a strong commitment to Canada being part of the achievement of the SDGs overall. And so we as researchers, we as citizen scientists, we as community members, we can all contribute to what Canada is trying to do to, if I can use the term again, shift the needle to a more holistic and sustainable future. In addition, the Canadian Mountain Network has made a real commitment to Indigenous-led research and research that contributes to reconciliation, equity, and inclusion. It really is a new approach to research that fully commits to IDCing and operating from a new lens based in community-based research. So it's a shifting from old-style research that was generally of benefit or interest to the researcher. So me as a researcher saying, this is what I'm interested in, and I want to research this because it answers a question that I have. And so it's instead completely reversing that narrative and seeking to investigate research that looks at local issues and why things are unfolding the way they are in these very fragile and contested spaces. So it's a complete shifting of how research has been approached in the past. And I'm so delighted that we were selected to be part of the Canadian Mountain Network. It's a network that's letting go of past colonial legacies in research. Research in the past that was generally about quantifying, about classifying, that didn't recognize local knowledge, the importance of citizen-led knowledge and Indigenous knowledge. and we're moving into a future of research that fully recognizes the value of qualitative work, of traditional knowledge, research that's much more inclusive and ultimately a benefit to the wider landscape and not just a vehicle to achieve more research funding in the future. And so much of past research is really, and if I can be so blunt about it, about the researcher trying to gain a name for themselves in a particular area of research so they can attract more funding in the future forward. And I feel strongly the Canadian Mountain Network has turned 180 degrees to saying, no, we're working on research that's of local interest, local benefit, and will ultimately move us all closer to these holistic, you know, ideals of conservation and sustainable development.
So now that we've mentioned the Canadian Mountain Network, and we finished our crash course, SDG 101, we're going to be moving into how the network is working to achieve sustainable development goals. So so Pam, moving back to you again, tell me about the Canadian Mountain Network's SDG project.
And so early on, we started talking about this among the partners in the Canadian Mountain Network, and the executive, the leaders in the Canadian Mountain Network were early arrivers to the idea of, we think that the work that's being done as part of the network could contribute to this overall global agenda. And so this wasn't some sort of idea based in struggle or selling commitment to the SDGs. It really kind of holistically rose up out of the work that people were already doing and out of the philosophy of the Canadian Mountain Network, the ethos of the network, I would say, for it. So we got involved at Vancouver Island University through the Canadian Mountain Network and the Sustainable Development Goal Project because of the work we were already doing at VIU. So faculty, staff, and students were early adopters of the enthusiasts, I would say, on the Sustainable Development Goals. It was a very much a student-driven initiative. There's been longstanding interest in sustainability at VIU that has been advanced through a student-led sustainability committee, longstanding student-run community garden on campus, and even a recent student-led initiative that had VIU designated through Bee City Canada as a bee-friendly campus. And I would clarify when I'm saying a bee-friendly campus, I do not mean the letter grade, because that's often what people, you're settling for bees? No, we're an A-plus campus for sure. But I'm talking about the pollinators and worker bees, and we are now one of the bee-friendly campuses. I believe there's seven in Canada that have joined Bee City Canada. And so the president's office at VIU funded early work in understanding how the university could advance the sustainable development goals, not just through academics, not just through coursework and research that's happening, research and scholarship at undergraduate or graduate levels, but from a whole university perspective that looked at the campus as a working city, how we procure goods, how food services operate, how the infrastructure operates on campus, and then how are we tied to the wider community. So taking that holistic perspective, we were approached by the Canadian Mountain Network's the leaders in the Canadian Mountain Network to apply that wide range perspective to the work of the Canadian Mountain Network. So it was easy to shift that multi-lensed approach to the work that's being done within the network. And again, how can we tie together what seem to be very diverse projects covering a lot of ground, but how do we suss out those ties to these 17 overall goals? How do we see how they tie to targets and indicators? Ultimately, what actions can we take? Because that is getting back to that point about it's nice to have a plan, but if you don't do something, it sits on a shelf. It has no useful value to making any change happen. So it's how can we take the work that's being done in the network, figure out the actions that need to be achieved, work together to achieve them, and then contribute to Canada's 2030 role in the global agenda. And I'll turn it over to Courtney and Jenica to provide details on how the Canadian Mountain Network Sustainable Development Goal Project unfolded.
So I'll kind of just build a little bit on what Pam mentioned about shifting our methods over from the Vancouver Island University Sustainable Development Goals Project. So in order to kind of understand what actions need to be taken moving forward in further advancing and achieving the SDGs, we need to know where do things currently stand. So the main objective of this CMN SDGs project so far has been to really figure that out. Where does the CMN currently stand in terms of advancing and achieving the Sustainable Development Goals? So to answer that question, we started off, basically we spoke with all of the principal investigators that are currently doing research projects with the Canadian Mountain Network. We learned just more about the individual research projects, and then we kind of try to tie those all together to figure out how is the CMN as a network advancing the Sustainable Development Goals. So the CMN is more than just these individual research projects as well. They have many initiatives that are advancing different components of sustainability. So we really just took a dive into everything that the CMN is doing. And then we just worked to kind of put those into, I guess, I don't want to say categories, but kind of categories that identify how those certain things are achieving targets and indicators throughout the 17 SDGs. So far that's what we've done. And we have some kind of preliminary idea of where the CMN is, but there's definitely a lot more work to be done still.
So moving on to another project, Pam, can you tell me about your work on the view from 2117 and how that relates to SDGs, how that specific project relates to SDGs, and which SDGs are being addressed?
Sure, I'll explain the project first. So what we're looking at in the view from 2117 is the ways in which individual and collective behavior, population growth, regulations and regulatory regimes with different levels of government and societal change have affected and will affect First Nations, mountain communities, mountain environments, and mountain economies over the next century. And so we're focusing our work on the Mount Arrowsmith Biosphere region. And so the region is located on the east side of Vancouver Island, north of Nanaimo, if you're looking to get your bearings, and centered on Mount Arrowsmith, which is the highest peak in the southern range of mountains on Vancouver Island. The Mount Arrowsmith Biosphere region is one of 18 biospheres across Canada. So these are regions, we already mentioned, designated by the United Nations under the Man in the Biosphere program. And so we are one of 714 biospheres in 129 nations across the world. And so it's a geographic boundary that's drawn on the Earth's surface for places that are special or different, that there's some condition within the biosphere that's worthy of consideration or recognition. And ultimately, biosphere regions are meant to act as model sites for conservation and sustainable development. That's the purpose of that designation from the United Nations. And so our work is within the biosphere. First of all, that's our, well, we're hoping ultimately that it will be of interest to a much wider landscape. So I mentioned the two themes that all biospheres work toward, sustainable development and conservation. All biospheres worldwide work toward research and education as well. And the Canadian Biosphere Network has added two additional focus areas, which is climate action and reconciliation. So that's what our project, geographically, that's where we sit. And those are the ideas that our project hinges on. So the other point that I would make about 2117 and where the name of our project came from, it is the vertical extent of Mount Arrowsmith. If you could stand on the top of the mountain and walk in a straight line transect to the bottom of the Salish Sea, it's 2117 meters. That is the vertical extent that you will, if you could walk that distance, which would be very difficult to do. There are many hazards in your way, but that's the idea. So if you could walk that transect, you would cover virtually every ecosystem and land use that you would find on Vancouver Island. So you can imagine walking that straight line distance. You would move through alpine meadows that are the home to Vancouver Island marmots. You'd walk through Garry Oak ecosystems, among the most impacted ecosystems, down to less than 5% of what originally existed on Vancouver Island. You'd walk through every form of human habitation and land use and then you would make your way through various stratas in the Salish Sea to the bottom of the ocean. So you can imagine this transective use, and then also imagine at the same time that 2117 is the time frame that we're considering. So we're looking out about 100 years is where the project came from. We're trying to understand the interconnectedness of people, economies, cultures, the different environments, and then how can we take a long-term approach to positively impacting what happens in the future. So from an SDG perspective, life on land, life below water, those are the two obvious SDGs that you would immediately see are applicable to the goals of our work. But as Courtney mentioned, the goals around sustainable development, climate action, quality education, reducing inequalities, and finding work for all are very closely tied to what we're trying to achieve. So there's many of them that you can draw that direct line connection to what we're proposing to do as part of our project and the SDGs. So we're looking at demographics, qualitative and quantitative field research, psychological assessments on how people feel about being in nature. How does nature contribute to your quality of life? We've got a big project happening on that. Ultimately, we're hoping to have an impact on government policies, on procedures, on defining new best practices. Ultimately, we're hoping to change regulatory environments for how we shape and allow human actions in these terribly fragile ecosystems. And then hopefully our work will be of use to other fragile and contested spaces on the Earth's surface, that there'll be a transferability of knowledge, a transferability of practices that come out of this. And ultimately that at some point in the future, we'll be able to look back and say, because we were members of the Canadian Mountain Network and worked with our partners and learned from our partners, we made practical and real change happen in this place.
What's next for SDGs and the Canadian Mountain Network going forward?
I'll start. We're looking to bring new partners into the Canadian Mountain Network in the short term. And so it creates a new exciting opportunity to understand what research, what community engagement, what are the Indigenous-led aspects of research that are coming forward, and how do they relate to the SDGs. So we'll be moving into the second round of gaining an understanding of what are the relevant SDGs, what are the focus areas, where are those places of overlap where we can work together to achieve practical actions. So we're right on the edge of an exciting new wave of incorporating the SDGs into the Canadian Mountain Network.
Yeah, and I guess building off of Pam, our next focus will just be, we're just gonna dive deeper really into everything that we've learned so far about how the CMN is contributing to the SDGs and learn more about what that actually means and how we can kind of help to move things along in the future by providing this information. So we're going to, you know, like Pam said, work with people who really, really, really know the SDGs. And we're also going to work really hard to bring that two-eyed seeing approach into the work that we're doing and consulting with Indigenous researchers and those who have the experience and the knowledge for sustainability and incorporate that into what we're doing.
That was Dr. Pamela Shaw, Courtney Vaujois, and Jenica Ng Cornish, three researchers from the Mount Arrowsmith Biosphere Region Research Institute. The three continue to work on several projects for the Canadian Mountain Network relating to SDGs, working to promote better public understanding and appreciation for the roles that mountains have in furthering SDGs. That's it for this edition of the Canadian Mountain Podcast in partnership with Mount Royal University. Thanks for listening. This podcast was produced from Treaty 7 territories, of which is immersed in ancient culture and storytelling. With the Canadian Mountain Podcast, our goal is to share both Western and Indigenous ways of storytelling, and we give appreciation to the stories that have been told on this land and shared through generations. Therefore, we give acknowledgement to the hereditary keepers of these lands, the Niitsitapi, Blackfoot, Stoney Nakoda, Sioux Tina, and Métis Nations. I'm Ethan Ward, and special thanks to show producer Sarah Buffalo. Be sure to join us again for more stories surrounding mountain places, whether that be in our own backyard or from around the country. Share and subscribe to get the latest updates on the new season, and be sure to tell your mountain-loving friends and colleagues. You can find us wherever you find your podcasts, and you can learn more about the Canadian Mountain Network at canadianmountainnetwork.ca.